Straight Talk on WRHI is presented by Founders Federal Credit Union. Relax, you're with Founders. Now here's Manning Kimmel broadcasting live from Substation 2 on Cherry Road in Rock Hill with Straight Talk, selected by the South Carolina Broadcasters Association as the state's top public affairs program.
And a good afternoon. Welcome into Substation 2, Cherry Road across from Winthrop, for another edition of our Straight Talk broadcast presented by Founders Federal Credit Union. Relax, you're with Founders. Our thanks to our co-sponsor today, Comporium, your friendly neighborhood tech giant. Piedmont Medical Center is with us, a community built on care. Find out more online at PiedmontMedicalCenter.com. And Good Pharmacy, your hometown pharmacy, Ebenezer Road at Camden Avenue in Rock Hill. Our thanks as well to HighSpeedWeb.net that streams our signal 24/7, 365. Well, here she is. She doesn't look like she's had anything to worry about at all. Her name is Dr. Sheila Quinn. She is the superintendent of the Clover School System, and and she can dance. Alton Hayes says she can dance.
My TikTok.
I don't know what you guys are talking about, but it's pretty interesting. Live on the air, by the way. Yeah. Just play like you don't know him. That's the easiest thing.
Okay.
How you been?
I've been great. How about you?
I've been fine. When is the graduation? Because I think your graduation is going to rock the world.
It is June 4th, assuming we don't have bad weather. We have a bad weather makeup day of June 8th, but we are super excited. Kings Mountain is welcoming the Clover School District to the Hounds Theater at the drive-in. We're going to each senior's got two cars, so they'll be in one, and their family will be in another, and it should be a really fun night.
Well, I tell you what, nobody likes what this has done to graduation ceremonies, but, you know, on the other side, I think this will be one nobody will ever forget.
Well, when we were planning it, it was so funny. We had all of the senior teachers who work graduation typically, and we knew we wanted to bring the kids together in a safe and responsible way. And we knew that they needed to have that experience of tossing their hat. They needed to walk across a stage. And so all of those things, just more we talked about it, the more the drive-in movie kind of checked all those boxes. And so I think it'll be a fun night. We got a big surprise at the end of it that I can't say on the air.
Oh, come on.
But we'll tell you all about it at the when it's all over.
Well, good for you. So we're graduating how many children? Sorry, young men and young women.
Well, our graduating class would have been 599, but we graduated almost 100 students at Christmas. So this group will be about just under 500, 499, 498.
So we have called 500, and then the parents, they can load a car up. Put as many as they can in one car.
We're trying to get 1,000 people into the two. So the Hounds Theater actually had three separate theater venues connected to one another, and one of them got destroyed in the storm. So we're using the other two, and we're going to have 1,000 cars in there. It'll be an undertaking.
And everybody will take a little speaker and put it inside their window?
Yeah, and they'll hear everything through their car. Well, actually, it comes through your radio now.
Oh, yeah.
So it'll come through the radio, and so you'll see the pre-recorded valedictorian speeches and salutatorian speeches, and the principal speech I've heard is a tearjerker. I hadn't seen it yet because I'm a mom, and I wanted to wait and kind of see that. So I'll be standing on the stage nodding as they come across getting their diploma, but I'm looking forward to it.
So what does the superintendent do when her senior son walks up to get his diploma, so as not to show any partiality?
You know,
how do you handle that?
He has said, you know, Mom, I'm going to hug you. And I said, son, that would set a very bad example. We're supposed to be social distancing. He said, but I'm going to hug you. So I'm trying to talk him out of it, but we'll see what happens.
Go for it, boy. Go for it. That's all I can say. All right. So with all that being said, you dismissed school sometime, what, middle March?
Yeah, March 12th.
March 12th. And how did the, you know, online learning experience go for y'all?
You know, we were very fortunate because we were one of the state's 8 e-learning districts. So we were already this year flipping and doing e-learning on bad weather makeup day, so that when a snow day happened or hurricane day or whatever the days are, we could learn from home on that day. So we had the infrastructure in place, and And really what we had to do in March is scale that out to district-wide and certainly a longer period of time. And at the time, you remember when we first heard it was 10 days, just make it 10 days. And we were like, oh, no problem. We can flip a day or two. We can flip 10 days. And then that's grown into more and more. So we've had to do a lot of contingency planning. But in terms of gearing up quickly, we were really set to gear up quickly.
So give me the insight from a teacher who has got a lesson plan for whatever,
right,
day number five. And that teacher is expecting to have a class and to teach that lesson, interact with the students, ask questions, what have you.
Right.
So all of a sudden that has to go online. Now, is it live online, or do they pre-record this and set it out there? How do they do this?
It's yes to both of those questions. So some lessons are pre-planned, pre-recorded. The teacher uploads that. Sometimes she's uploading a particular video that they need to watch and then do something with it. So some of it's pre-set up, and we use our learning management system called Canvas. It's the same learning management system Clemson uses, so it's widely used. And so we would pre-plan, set those up, and send those out to students. Other lessons are synchronous. Meet me at 9 o'clock in the morning. We're going to do a calculus lesson, and then come back at 2 o'clock. If it didn't make sense, I'll do some one-on-one tutoring. And so teachers have really tried to be flexible with kids' schedules and set up some synchronous and asynchronous activities for them to do.
So when it's live, are you using Zoom, or do you have your own system in-house?
We started out using Zoom, but we have since purchased WebEx. We wanted to try to have a system we could control more, and so the purchased WebEx system allows us to protect privacy a little bit better and really work within our network. And so we are a WebEx district now.
And I would imagine you'd have to get a whole bunch more bandwidth to make all this happen?
Our bandwidth was pretty strong. As an e-learning district, that's one of the tests we had to meet to become an e-learning district with the state. And so we haven't had a big issue, but we do have a large portion of our district, and that's out in the Bethany area, where we don't have broadband and we don't have fiber. And so we had to put the Wi-Fi extensions into all of our parking lots at school. That particular school, we've had to be more flexible about people coming in, the teachers even, because we have a lot of teachers who live out there that they need to come into the school to do all of these Zoom lessons and WebEx lessons. So we've had to be more flexible in our Bethany side of town because of where it is.
So you didn't create any hot spots with buses?
We did. We had the Wi-Fi buses that we send out also. We had three of those, and that has been somewhat successful. I mean, kids have used it, but I wouldn't say it's the main place they're coming is to our parking lots, and they're coming with their moms and dads in the afternoon.
So you all are waiting in the educational world for a green light, I guess, from two people, one from the governor and one from the superintendent of education, Molly Spearman. While you're waiting for that, are you, furiously taking a look at what we're going to do, let's just say this summer?
Listen, we are contingency planning every single day. In fact, I made a list for our board and for our principals on here's everything we need to think about doing differently. We made that list in March. And so we've been kind of ticking through that list. How are we going to close schools down? Are we going to collect devices this summer? Which, by the way, we're not. This summer, we're going to leave those devices, except for our seniors, in the hands of kids, because what we want to do is send out some enrichment activities that we then incentivize if students keep doing those activities online to kind of stay ahead, that we have local businesses where we've bought ice cream or cookies or other thing, and they can go earn an incentive and pick those up. We're also doing some hosting some events on our campus. So we normally partner with Winthrop for GT artistic camps in the summer. We're going to host a week-long art camp and a week-long music camp and a week-long vocal camp in district, in smaller groups with our related arts teachers, because Winthrop couldn't host us this summer, but we didn't want our GT artistic kids to have nothing. We're going to do computer science camp virtually. So that's one we could continue to flip and do from home. And then we're going to bring in some kids who've kind of gotten lost in this e-learning and haven't really been with us the whole time. We've kind of lost touch with. We're going to run our buses and pick up some kids and bring them in and try to do some face-to-face.
So these summer programs, are they voluntary or are they required?
Well, so typically third graders who aren't reading on grade level are required to come to summer camp. Because testing got canceled, some of that went away. But we are trying to, we've said to parents, remember, you would have been coming to summer camp. it's important that you stay ahead. Let's try to come in. But the bottom line is it is voluntary. It's absolutely voluntary. So we are going to run summer school for middle and high school, and we're going to do it in a blended format. So a lot of it will be delivered at home, but they can come in to test or come in to get an extra tutoring. And those are, while they're voluntary, they're to promote to the next grade. So sometimes that feels a little less voluntary.
Well, you just said the magic word, because I can't figure out when a teacher has been removed from a student for 3 months, March, April, May, mm-hmm. they have to figure out, is this student ready to go on to the next grade, or do we have to do something else before they pass? How are you going to do? Is it all subjective or what?
No, it's not. One of the contingency lists was, how are we going to grade? And so we had to, in March, once it became, well, it was really in April, once it became clear that it wasn't looking like we were going to be coming back, how do you handle a whole fourth 9 weeks in terms of giving appropriate grades? In the elementary schools and the middle schools, we froze the average at third 9 weeks and made fourth 9 weeks not pass-fail, but we designed a different rubric that we give. It was really designed towards giving kids feedback on whether they were mastering something or not. And so we're having to go back now to that third 9 weeks final average and say who was behind then, and we're inviting those folks in. If they did well in e-learning, maybe that moves you up a little bit. If they didn't, do anything, we need to bring you in this summer. High school, we continue to average grades because we were more equipped there to flip learning, because kids were better able to flip and get their studies online just by virtue of their age and the kinds of classes that you take at high school.
There has to be a tremendous difference of being in a classroom and looking at the student in the eye.
Right.
And you know full well whether that student has got it or they don't, versus some screen and you're not even sure they're paying attention.
Well, so what our teachers had to do is they had to agree on a couple of things. One, if you had a zero, the kid didn't do anything, you don't know if they know it or not. Reach out, touch base, at least try to get some work. If they fail it, reteach it and let them try it again. So we had a lot of our teachers just saying, I taught that lesson three times and that kid assessed on it three times, but they finally passed it. So our teachers have been absolutely amazing to work with kids to make sure, because no one's learning in their preferred learning mode right now, or very few. So our teachers have had to accommodate for that.
So if somebody is on the bubble, mm-hmm. and we're not sure whether they're going to make it, there's an opportunity, yes or no, this summer to get them in there, and we're going to get them to where they need to be?
That's exactly right. And in fact, the 15th of March is the last day of new learning, because we're going into, you need to make up things, you need to recover things, we need to reteach things, and then they'll work through. I say that, it's the last day for new learning for our high school kids. Elementary is the last day's the 22nd, and then we're going into, you need to redo this, you need to make up mode with them. So we've built in some time at the end of the year to reteach, relearn, get some assignments in.
One last question on that. When they come back to school, let's hope they do come back, will there be a segment of the beginning of this new school year to do the exact same thing?
Exact same thing. Have to. We can't assume we know where every child is, so we're going to have to assess to see where they are.
Okay, so let's talk about, guess what? We want to come back to school. We don't know that yet. But I am intrigued. If they do open up the floodgates and allow everybody to get back to school, how are you going to take a classroom which might hold 30 students and configure it so that everybody has 36 square feet of space?
Yes, that is the real problem. And so what we're finding is Superintendent Spearman is convening a task force, and that task force is giving us some guidance. And I think it's divided into three groups. One is safety, disinfecting, cleaning kinds of things. The other is operations, what kind of operations, like your bus system. And then the third is instruction. What we're hearing from that group right now, and as I listen to their debate, is probably no more than 12 kids in a class. So if we have to run school differently, and right now that's undetermined, but if we have to run school differently, we're being asked to begin to think about how we might split schedules, run a modified schedule, load kids on from the back of the bus to the front of the bus, only one child per seat, disinfecting in between routes. I mean, all of those things come into play, and we'll have to have a plan for all of it. So that's kind of what we're doing now. We're thinking about fall and beginning to say, what would that look like? And it looks different at elementary versus middle versus high.
They say that a school bus properly spaced instead of holding 50 kids, might be able to hold 17. So, are you going to be running shifts? I mean,
we could be. We absolutely could be running shifts. We could be running A day, B day. We could be really looking at where we have high density and splitting that neighborhood by A day, B day. I mean, there's all kinds of things like that we're going to need to think about.
Did you ever think in your wildest imagination that a public school system would be faced with these kinds of challenges?
I mean, in all my preparation through all of my college courses, all of my internships, and all 28 years I've been working, this is the most creative and innovative I've ever been asked to be. And there was no preparation for it. I mean, you have to think on your feet.
Well, do you, as a superintendent, I mean, do you all have a group of peers to get together, I don't know, Zoom or telephone calls or whatever, to say, what are you doing down there? Because I need some help on figuring out what to do up here.
Funny you should say that. I was on the phone before I came here today with the superintendent in York, and we were comparing some things about what are you thinking about this summer. And I said, how about we just set up a WebEx call with the four York County superintendents, or maybe even our whole consortium. We have a consortium, and let's just start working together. And so we're going to do that.
Kelly Cox,
yeah.
Sheila Quinn, Chuck Epps. And what's his name over here?
Bill Cook.
Oh, yeah, Bill Cook. I've had him on, too. All right. We're going to go ahead and take our mid-program break. Remind you that you are listening to Straight Talk, live from Substation 2, Cherry Road across from Winthrop, presented by Founders Federal Credit Union. Relax, you're with Founders. Our thanks to our co-sponsor today, Comporium, your friendly neighborhood tech giant. Of course, you know we broadcast live from Substation 2, Cherry Road across from Winthrop. Even in Clover, they know why everybody comes here, and we got quite a crowd today because we make fresh subs and salads right before your eyes 7 days a week. The magical formula is in the white letters, and we all say it together at the count of three. Are you ready? One, two, three. Slice, slice, slice. Garden, garden, garden. Back after these words.
If it's 12:30, it's Straight Talk on WRHI.
Have you ever wondered why so many people enjoy dining at Substation 2?
Love the bread. Number 19's the best.
Fresh, delicious bread.
It's fresh.
The food is really good, and it's a great price.
I'm Charlie Ruffalo, and I guarantee you'll feel the same way after eating here at Substation 2, Cherry Road across from Winthrop.
This is Dr. Karen Jenkins, Emergency Room Director at Piedmont Medical Center. When someone is experiencing a life-threatening emergency, such as a stroke or a heart attack, every second counts. Piedmont Medical Center's emergency departments in Rock Hill and on Gold Hill Road in Fort Mill are open 24/7 to treat life's unexpected emergencies. Even in the middle of a pandemic, our commitment to providing safe, high-quality emergency medical care in our community remains strong. Piedmont Medical Center, a community built on care.
Our common sense investing is not designed to take your life savings, roll the dice, and make you rich. We design a plan to keep the standard of living you have grown accustomed to the same throughout your retirement, be it 20, 30, or even 40 more years. Anderson Griggs Investments, 324-5044, or online at andersongriggs.com.
This is Danny Rogers with Paul Davis Restoration and Remodeling. If your home or business is damaged by water, fire, storm, or mold, Paul Davis is here to help. We are staffed with over 35 trained and certified professionals to handle any type of property damage. Our team mission is to provide extraordinary care while serving our neighbors in their time of need. Whether you need repairs in one room or rebuild a whole home, Paul Davis is here to help. Find us online at pauldavisrockhill.com.
These days, everybody wants peace of mind. Some people do yoga. Some meditate. Me? I use Ready Home Security from Comporium. Ready Home lets me monitor my house, even when I'm hundreds of miles away. With Ready Home, I can use my phone or tablet to set my alarm, turn on lights, lock the doors, even control my thermostat. Yoga's great, but knowing that everything's great at home, now that's peace of mind. That's Ready Home. To learn more about Ready Home, visit Comporium.com or call 888-403-2667.
Our lives have changed tremendously lately. Founders Federal Credit Union wants you to know we are here for you. While our world right now may be uncertain, your money at Founders is not. Founders Federal Credit Union is fully backed by the NCUA, and Founders members have many ways to access their money at Founders. Our drive-thrus remain open, many with extended hours. Our ATMs are fully serviced. Founders Online and the Founders app are available to you 24/7. Relax. We are your credit union, and we are here for you. Not a member of Founders? Visit relaxjoinfounders.com to apply for membership.
There are lots of reasons why people like dining at Substation 2.
A good deal for a delicious sandwich.
Quality of the food. I get what I want. It tastes great every time.
Hit the spot, definitely. It's amazing.
I'm Charlie Ruffalo, and I guarantee you'll feel the same way after eating here at Substation 2, Cherry Road across from Winthrop.
Straight Talk continues now on WRHI. Brought to you by Founders Federal Credit Union. Relax.
You're with Founders.
And back we are here at Substation 2, Cherry Road across from Winthrop. Dr. Sheila Quinn is with us today, superintendent of the Clover School System. And amongst graduation, amongst e-learning, and what are we going to do for school next fall, she's had this other thing that she's been working on called impact fees. You need the impact, you need a stream of revenue to help pay for building construction. Is that what you're trying to do?
That's exactly right. So on the business side of education, you have to plan for growth. And Clover School District is growing by a little more than 300 students per year. So we're always in a position where we have to think about what that means in terms of our capacity. Are we going to run out of space? And we've spent the time to do several studies, like what is our growth rate, how much can our buildings hold, and now we know we're going to need some new facilities. We're going to try to look at a bond referendum in the next year, and so we need to plan for that. We can't put a school up overnight. It's a 3 to 4 year process, and so the impact fees can help generate some revenue that would help our taxpayers not have to shoulder the full burden of that.
Well, you would think that we've been down this road before in York County, and you just follow the playbook that Fort Mill used, because they finally got theirs through, although they're not using the cash quite yet, but they've got it through. So you used the same people to do the kind of study that Fort Mill had done?
Yeah, silly me. I thought, you know, we'll get this handled in about 6 months' time. And I look at my original timeline on this, and I kind of have to laugh about it. But, yes, we did use a lot of what Fort Mill did. We used the same consultant to do our study. We used the same mathematical formula and process. We leaned on them heavily on how to get through the process with our planning commission and county council. And so we really felt like we benefited being second, because we got to see some of the hurdles that they face. One of the biggest hurdles was their community, some of their building community felt like that they were kind of quiet about it and kind of snuck up on them a little bit. We did not. We have had over 25 community meetings. We've met with our builders. We have enjoyed tremendous support by our community in this process. So I think our transparency has helped. Everyone knows we're doing this. And we didn't think we could sneak it in because Fort Mill had done it. So we wanted to be transparent.
So when you met with the building community, mm-hmm. which, of course, was in opposition to what Fort Mill was attempting to do, and in
right.
fact took it to court, and they've lost every time they've gone up the system. What was the response from the building community?
Well, I met with our local builders. So there are builders that build large developments that I did not get to meet with. But our local builders are guys who build 20 to 30 homes, or might build maybe 4 or 5 homes. A lot of those builders are parents in our district, and they understand the need for schools. They understand that our community is going to have to pay for it one way or the other, and that this makes sense. Their very understandable concern is will it slow their business and will it slow growth? And what we have assured them, and what we've definitely learned from Fort Mill, is we live in a desirable place, and we have a good school district, and people want to come to our district, and I don't think the growth is going to stop.
Yeah, to echo that point, Fort Mill's impact fee was like $18,000 or $19,000. And, of course, the argument was this is just going to kill growth. And exactly the opposite has happened. They're sitting on a war chest of about $20 million somewhere in that neighborhood. And as fast as they build them, people are buying them.
Right.
I mean, people want to live in the Fort Mill area. And obviously that's moving mm-hmm. over to the Clover area as well, because your quality of school systems, your quality of life, et cetera, et cetera. So the consultant, in their grand wisdom, what kind of impact fees are they suggesting?
So an impact fee is based on the level of service that it takes to build the schools you're going to need. In our impact fee, we are looking at a high school. We are looking at an elementary school. We need middle school space, but we have a ninth grade campus that we're going to convert back to a middle school. That'll save our taxpayers about $50 million.
Mm-hmm.
We need 20 new buses to accommodate, that's activity buses and other buses to accommodate transporting children, and we need land. So all of those factors were added together to calculate what the impact it is to teach a child or to educate a child in Clover. So our fee is about $15,000 for single family. It's about $9,000 for a mobile home and $7,500 for a multifamily.
Now, one of the things that you clarified for me, because you do have I don't know, a segment of your community that lives in mobile homes, that if somebody was to upgrade their mobile home from an existing one to a new one, there would be?
No impact fee to that. An impact fee is for net new growth. So if I want to upgrade a mobile home, replace an older one, and a lot of the mobile homes that are in parts of our county are developments owned by an individual, and so they may want to upgrade over time, and so that would be no impact fee.
And the same thing applies with a house. I mean, if you were to buy somebody's, if you bought a new house and then you sold it to me, you pay the impact fee. I don't.
That's exactly right.
All right. Okay.
Right.
All right. So you did all your homework. You followed the playbook of Fort Mill. And I'm sure you went in with rose-colored glasses and thought, I'm going to get this done. And?
Well, we had our first meeting with the Planning Commission on May 11th, and we ran into some hurdles there. First of all, the Planning Commission is one person down, so there was an even number. And so when it came to vote on the full impact fee, we had some resistance about how high it was. Now, Fort Mill ran into the same resistance, that number sounded very high. But even when they tried to move the number down, way down or sort of down, different people started voting yes and no. And so we never could get a firm majority of five yeses. One vote was 5-3 no. One vote, the rest of the votes were 4-4 tied. And then the final vote was, Clover, come back next month and maybe present some new information or some new numbers. That got a unanimous vote. So we'll be going back to the Planning Commission next month to talk again.
When they say bring us some new numbers, how do you do that when you've already paid all this money for a study that justifies the number should be 15,000, 7,000, or 9,000 and 7,500?
Yeah, that is the hard part, because any number that we pull out of the air would really be fairly arbitrary. It won't be based on the data that we have. So that is the real challenge there. I think one of the things that we've got to, one of the myths that we have to debunk with the Planning Commission is that housing developments that are going on the western side of our county, which is our more rural side, are somehow lower and different, or lower in price and different from what's happening in our Lake Wylie side. We are actually growing on both sides of our district, and we're growing more on the Lake Wylie side, and the new home prices on that side are about $357,000, and our new home prices on the western side are $300,000. And that's what I don't think our Planning Commission understood. I think they believe that the types of housing that's going up on one side of the district is so different, so maybe a fee should be less on that side. And what we've tried to explain is we're one district. And wherever growth happens, we move kids and rezone, so any growth impacts all of our schools.
Mm. You know, what tilted it big time for Fort Mill was when the Kansas County Council had a public hearing, and there were 500 Fort Mill residents who packed the McKelvey Center.
Right.
And I'll never forget, I think it was Council Member Christy Cox who said, you know, what you've done here, or maybe it was Allison Love, I don't know, one of the two of them, got up and said, you've showed us exactly what we need. You know, the public needs to come out like this and show their support. Have you thought about pulling something like that together?
No, yes, we have. And I have presented to every PTO, every SIC, multiple contingency groups in our community, our chambers, and those kinds of people, and Lions Club and Rotary. And I think when the time comes, if we're allowed to pack the house, which that's the big question now, is can we even do that? I think we'll have very strong support.
Well, you've got enough to do, don't you?
Got plenty to do.
Not worried about it.
Got plenty to do.
And you tell everybody last night what time you got home from the budget meeting at the school district.
Well, we had a late meeting last night. It was after 10 o'clock.
Yeah, had dinner at 1 o'clock in the morning. So very good for you. Well, we didn't get a chance to talk about the budget. Aren't you lucky? Because that wraps up our Straight Talk program.
Maybe next time.
Have a happy graduation, Dr. Quinn.
Thanks very much for
being here with us today. And that's going to wrap up our Straight Talk program. Live from Substation 2, Cherry Road across from Winthrop, presented by Founders Federal Credit Union. Relax, you're with Founders. Our thanks to our co-sponsor today, Comporium, your friendly neighborhood tech giant. Well, look who's here. Sophia has shown up to lead us in the wonderful chant that we do every day here at Substation 2. Fresh subs and salads 7 days a week. And there's a magical way we do it right here on the white letters. And we're all going to say it together at the count of three. One, two, three. Go, Sophia. Slice, slice. Garden, garden, garden. Oh, she screwed it up. Oh, come on. It's a count of three.